Welcome to the Fuller Tracing Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 25th of July, and I'm recording at 9:20 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, well, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first I have a quick look at some of the things that have actually happened here during the last week, and it's been a lively one, hasn't it? Now, the week really started burdened with the Russian situation. I don't need to say more than that. And a lot of fright, a lot of talk about sanctions, tough sanctions. Also, people saying this is the worst situation really since the Cold War. And I suspect it is in some respects. But then a sort of a slightly sort of depressed acceptance and reality seems to have set in around Europe that Russia is an important trade partner that they're not really going to do much of anything. Now, the USA certainly is not going to do all of Europe's sanctions for it. It has the power to do so, I would suggest, but it might do a little bit more, just to warn Putin that that he is actually vulnerable. But other than that, it looks like we're going back to business as usual here for a while. Still a very tense situation in Ukraine, obviously. The Eastern European countries, particularly those that are not members of the EU, will be on a higher state of anxiety than Western Europe, that's for sure. And within Eastern Europe, there is a militarily powerful loose cannon as the head of state. And that's going to remain the case, clearly, for a while longer. Okay, so what really happened here, though? Well, that cost a bit of a pall over Europe's performance in terms of stock markets, and they suffered a little bit further here today. I think that they are susceptible to some additional downside, quite possibly. But I don't think it'll turn into a real rout beyond what we've already seen. And the main reason, I think, for that is that the European Central Bank and Super Mario Draghi are in a strong position to come in and help and lend support, particularly against a background of fairly attractive or accommodative, I should say, monetary policies in a number of other countries. Now, if Europe does pull back further, and particularly if it does so sharply, I think that's an outside chance. But if it does happen in this uncertain world, then I think that would create a buying opportunity, because you can bet that monetary policy is going to remain accommodative in the Eurozone for really quite a long time. And you don't have to worry about a collapsing currency, because it's the second most important reserve currency. So it will always be supported by international governments and investors. Okay, well, now what about Europe? And I think this is the really exciting area here. Well, it's the most exciting area, or it's the biggest exciting area. Another way to describe it here right now. And it's been lively, to put it mildly. And we've seen, for instance, Japan, which had lagged. You might recall I mentioned in last night's audio, I believe, that the TSE 2 index, that's that second section index, that had pushed to a new recovery high. So while the Nikkei and the topics were lagging, that was a good omen. And they had strong performance in here today, up 1% on average. But the bigger story still in the Asian region, I believe, is what China is doing. I mean, we've had a few false dawns, to put it mildly, in terms of the A shares, but this one looks better, and it seems to be timed with a wrapping up of some economic changes and various sort outs behind the scenes by the government. I think most of us always assumed that those were largely going to be positive. There were an awful lot of rumors about various problems, but I think they were probably exaggerated. And the big story, though, on China is that it is really cheap among the bigger stock markets. And that's certainly, I think, an invitation to global investors once they see some signs that the market is beginning to perform. And they are seeing that. And I think that break above by the Hang Seng index, Hong Kong Hang Seng index, above 24,000, which is extended by another 74 points in here today, that is certainly ringing bells for us and a good many other people. And I think also the A share index, Shanghai Composite A share index, that rounding, saucering, bottoming activity that you see, you really need to look at a daily chart to get a good picture of it. But it looks like the best start, I'll put it this way, in terms of a recovery rally that we've seen over the last few years, and we've certainly had a few false starts, to put it mildly. But again, valuations behind being the driver there. Now, if that is true, and I think China could move up quite sharply here over the next well, over the lengthy medium term here, short term and lengthy medium term. Now, if that's true, if that does happen, I think that will be very good for the rest of the Asian region for the most part. But a lot of those so-called little tigers, and I think things like Thailand and Malaysia and Indonesia, well, they've been looking steady generally. And well, they have been steady generally, having peaked way back, I think, in the late in the first half of last year. But they have been, and then they went through little cyclical bear markets in percentage terms, certainly over 20% for most of them. But they're now back retesting their highs overall, and I think we will see some further gains. They're not all that expensive relative to other markets, although they're more expensive than China at this stage. Then India, well, I won't talk too long on that because I've said so much. It did lose its consecutive day gains in here, hardly surprising after eight strong gains the days to the upside. It came down a little bit in here today, but India is the governance change story of the year, if not the decade or more, and I suspect it is of the decade or more, Narendra Modi. And it's an exceptionally exciting situation, and there is a wall of money which really wants to go back into India, and not everybody who wants to buy has bought, despite the 24% gain this year in US dollar terms. It's moved up so swiftly that there are a lot of people who really are somewhat underweight in here and would like to buy on setbacks. I mean, my feeling is, and I know a lot of subscribers now have a decent investment position in India, and great if you have. And if you haven't got it, well, I'm certainly not criticizing you. It's volatile. It's not for everybody, but it's certainly for a lot of us. And I think that if you have a reasonable position there, then Really, the strategy I would use, same strategy I used between 2003 rather, and 2000 and 7, was that when you get a sharp reaction, that's the time to step in and pick up a little bit more. I don't think we'll get huge reactions. I certainly don't think we'll get a bear market for a very long time. And as I've said before, we could easily see this market very, very substantially higher by the end of the year. And if we take the S&P BSE Sensex index, I think I was talking about it when it was at that 24,000 level. I could easily see that going up at least 50%, and possibly doubling or more within the next 4 to 5 years. So that's a very interesting situation. So is Vietnam. I don't think among the important economies, I don't think there's one that I really dislike there. Taiwan's doing extremely well. Singapore, it's not going to have the volatility of some of the others, but it's a steady it's a steady market, showing some reasonable relative strength. And I think it's the most interesting area in terms of its potential. And you've got your choice from developed markets, obviously Japan, Singapore also a developed market. And we can South Korea, you may want to classify that in the same category. But these are all attractive markets, and attractive on valuations, and attractive on performance, and attractive on global GDP growth. Okay, well, I've discussed Europe, so let's go on to, I started with Europe, and let's go on to the U.S. market. Still generally in form, although we're up near roundophobia levels. It's high. It was down a little bit in here today, about 0.5% on average, slightly more for the Dow. But these big roundophobia levels, the overextensions, the short-term overbought condition, overextensions relative to the 200-day moving averages, and I would also caution on the basis of valuations. But, and it's a very important series of buts, the US has a lot going for it. And for one thing, we still have this very accommodative monetary policy, although we can see the end in sight. It's not somewhere way over the horizon. We know that quantitative easing, for instance, is going to almost certainly end around the end of October. That doesn't mean that interest rates go surging higher, and Janet Yellen has been quite conservative in terms of comments on rates, and suggesting that they may only move up quite modestly. So that's a favorable monetary tailwind. Still, I certainly do expect some turbulence ahead. I'm frankly surprised that we haven't seen more turbulence on Wall Street this year, and we really haven't had any except for that choppy January period. But I think we really ought to put it in our minds that it could very easily occur, or that overdue 10% plus correction, for instance. Could easily occur for one reason or another. It may be some exogenous event that contributes to it. But the big point here is that while it's not as attractive as some other markets in terms of valuations, you can still find individual shares, as Owen keeps pointing out on very effectively on a regular basis. What really looks good and what looks in form in the overall rotational process. And I urged in previous audios, keep an eye on those US Treasuries, because if you want a bellwether here, indicator, that 10-year is at 2.5%, 2.46 and change. It's like a little closer to 2.47% on the 10-year. Now, that's not very attractive as far as going into bonds is concerned, quite obviously, in my opinion. But I'm thinking of it as an indicator for the overall stock market. In other words, how long is the sweet spot that we've been in going to last? Certainly not forever, but it hasn't ended yet, or it hasn't gone away just yet. When we start to see that 10-year yield rally sharply, and I think certainly the 3% level would be a warning, here, then we know that risks in the stock market will be increasing. But I don't see anything on the horizon that will put or would cause a really significant bear market. Will we get cyclical bear markets, which most people would define as around 20%? Well, sure. Sure, we'll see that. I would think we'll see at least one of those over the next 3 to 4 years. But are we going to get another 2000 or another 2008? No, in my opinion, I can't see why that would be the case. We went through that very searing experience and the massive deleveraging. Well, you know the whole story on that, and we're not going to repeat that anytime soon. As a matter of fact, I'm on record, and I've been saying all last year and this year that beyond that turbulence that I expect over the next 3 to 4 years, that I think we will then have even clearer evidence that we're in a secular bull market than we have at present. And secular bull markets are interrupted by some bear markets, as you probably know. And just look back on some of those long-term charts. I mean, 1987, that was certainly a bear market interruption that terrified loads of people, and it's just sort of a blip on the chart when you look at it here today, in context of the last 30 to 50 years. Okay, so what else does Wall Street have going for it? Well, it's energy independence. That's very, very clear. It has really taken over much of the lead in technology, and that's something that people were wringing their hands, and I was certainly concerned about this, saying the U.S. was gradually losing its technology lead, and even the great Lee Kuan Yew, who certainly is a good seer of the future, one of the smartest men on the planet, former Prime Minister of Singapore, of course. He'd said about, was it 10 years ago? It was at least five to 10 years ago. He'd said that the U.S. had only 20 more years in technology, and then other countries would be overtaking it. Well, the U.S. is still powerfully in front, but technology is improving on a global basis. But at any rate, the U.S. is certainly a very competitive player in that field, and is likely to remain so for the foreseeable future, not least because it does attract a lot of people to its technology hubs from around the world. Now, the U.S. is certainly not free of problems. I think that we have a president in the U.S. who is important in terms of the whole the whole racial history of the United States, for a starter. He's not a belligerent type, and that's a relief to most Americans, and indeed to most of the world, perhaps. But you've got a situation in terms of taxes where you've got this ridiculously high tax rate 35% in terms of the government taxes on corporations in the United States, and then you add in state taxes, and you're up at around 39%, and thus you're getting more and more corporations wanting to push out and conduct as much of their business offshore as possible. And I don't see, but more importantly, the people who comment on what's going to happen in terms of these Republican and Democrat debates here, that not much, a whole lot is going to change and over the next couple of years. And we'll have to see what happens. I think we should have, hopefully, a better environment with the next president coming in. But the U.S. really does need to make those taxes more competitive, and that will encourage U.S. industries to repatriate capital that they've earned overseas, particularly the autonomies in that category. And they would also hire more people, and that would be good for the U.S. economy generally. Hire more people and pay somewhat pay better salaries, which would be good again. Good for the economy. So that's a problem. Tax rates in the U.S. and a government that does not have economic performance as its top priority and I've said it. I don't want to belabor the point there overall. Okay, what about bond markets? Well, I feel that this is the ranging, bottoming out process in terms of yields pretty much on a global basis, and that they will move higher. They may not move dramatically higher because for reasons of global competition, some disinflationary pressures that will remain in the system overall. I think we're still some way away from a period when the global economy is overheating, but we'll see that. We'll see that within the next five to six years, and that will certainly push up interest rates. But as investment vehicles, have a look at that total return chart. It's a Merrill Lynch chart. I posted it, I think, 2 days ago. And it's easy enough to find in the library. Just search under total return. And then, again, you'll see several of them in there. But it's the Merrill Lynch one of those U.S. Treasury bonds. And the people who've been holding those over the last 35 years have done incredibly well. The chart action and the economic background, as I perceive it at any rate, suggests that game is in its very much in its latter stage, and that it will end, and bonds will people will start seeing losses rather than total return gains here. So I'd be careful. I wouldn't want to have my investment capital there. I would much rather have a diversified portfolio of quality autonomy type equities. And looking elsewhere in terms of currencies, I don't think there's a lot to say in here right now. No country wants a strong currency at this time, but some can live with it more than others. I think we will probably see a period of reasonable stability in the currency markets overall. So I don't think they're going to be a crucial factor. In other words, in terms of investments or where they are, it'll be one-offs, and those will be exceptional situations that we'll see as we go forward. But other areas I do want to talk about, take these commodity sectors. We've had the benefit of good weather in terms of agricultural crops for the most part. There are a few question marks forming over the U.S. crops, which were large in terms of acreage and doing extremely well in terms of their growth. And as they approach that harvesting season, and I'm thinking about soybeans and corn and wheat right now, that Midwestern regions, or certainly major portions of the Midwest in the United States, it's quite dry, and that is a risk, particularly for soybeans. I commented on that and wrote about that earlier in the week. So you've got some depressed agricultural commodity prices. If we take soybeans, corn, and wheat, and they may well stage a partial recovery here. Again, it's very weather related. If the weather forecasts are wrong and some good rain comes in next week, well, it could knock them right back. But I would put it this way: they're on the lower side of the ranges that we're likely to see over the next few years. So there may well be some trading opportunities there to the upside. Meat contracts, awfully expensive, scary expensive, but when I get tempted to short one of those, it gets a little pullback and then consolidates and moves to new highs. That won't go on indefinitely, but certainly beef prices are very, very expensive. But fortunately, chicken and well is considerably less so. Okay. In the industrial commodities, crude oil. Well, I was worried about it when we were up around that 116 for Brent, and we had the ISIS fanatics running all over the place in Iraq and elsewhere. But fortunately, that's settled down a little bit, and I think we'll get more sideways ranging here overall. The last thing in the world that we need is a spike in energy prices. I think it's a good sign that we haven't had that so far, because there certainly have been disturbances in those Middle Eastern producers and some of the African producers overall. And one of the reasons why we haven't had some higher prices is because the technological accelerated rate of technological innovation, enabling the lateral drilling, the deeper drilling, much, much more efficient drilling, and then the fracking and that contribution that's being made. And then, of course, the hell for leather development of renewables, too often in the unbelievably expensive and vulnerable wind stations, but solar every single year. The efficiency of new solar panels is increasing, and that'll probably go on beyond the rest of my lifetime. So this is in line with that long-term forecast of mine that we would see. We were still in a difficult period. I've been saying this for the last 3 years, that we would remain in this sort of difficult period in terms of supply and demand, which would keep prices high, but that we were heading towards a period where we would see declines in the costs of energy in real terms. We're not yet there in terms of the decline in those prices, but could we get there within the next couple of years? Possibly. Possibly. And will we get there over the long term? Unquestionably. And so 10 years from now, I would expect energy prices to definitely be lower in real terms. That means inflation-adjusted terms, of course. Now, mining, important sector. You'll notice that mining has had a very good week, And indeed, it's had a pretty good couple of months. The industrial metal prices are moving up. Mining shares, viable mining shares, have certainly seen some very good rallies. This is a classic late in the cycle mover, and I would expect mining shares to be moving up beyond the actual lengthy medium-term peak that we eventually get on Wall Street. As I've already said, I don't think we're there just yet. Mining, I think, will remain attractive here over the medium term. People are worried about China not needing as much mining, but there's plenty of the global economy GDP growth picks up. There'll be plenty of demand for these materials. And also the companies are smarter in terms of their production and distribution, and they're also more efficient thanks to technology. So it's an attractive sector, and I'm sure you've seen the charts of BHP Billiton and that very attractive Type 3 base formation that it is now broken up out of. So that looks good, and I think I've probably gone on long enough. So I'll just say, have a fantastic weekend and all the very best to all of you.